The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Yair Rodriguez will be your winner by TKO due to injury.
Think this can get you a title shot?
Of course, of course. Who wouldn't say no to that, right? Bueno, viva Mexico.
Yair El Pantera Rodriguez!
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered, Matt.
Hi, Jimmy.
And I, we have a busy show today. We're going to be joined by Chef. I keep saying Chief because he's ex-military. Chef Andre Rush. Really a fascinating guy. And of course, Yair Rodriguez, who
not
won that. What's that?
Not why you said it.
No, I said what?
That's not why you said, oh, he's ex-military. That's why I called him a chief instead of chef. When you look at chef, it looks like chief. Let's be honest.
Oh, it does. Yeah, but I wasn't looking at it when I said it.
Well,
I know his name is Chef Andre Rush, but I always hear that as Chief Andre Rush because he was military. But yeah, you're right. That could be a visual mistake.
Why am I looking to split hairs with my good friend? I like
I would tell you.
Wearing black shirts. Yo, Yair is here. Sorry.
Yes,
I got
he
excited.
Is.
Yair is here.
Yes, you did. And that's right. Exactly the enthusiasm over that unfortunate ending to the fight.
Jimmy, he had him in an armbar. Jimmy,
yep.
I went to my 30-year reunion. Let's talk about that 30-year reunion.
Oh, yes.
We talked to the great Yair Rodriguez.
And they were dry. They were dry. It was in the first round. So I don't know how.
We're talking about this. We're going to talk about this with Yair.
I want to know.
Let me start this thing off. Don't be a prick.
I don't know.
You got to take my question.
I won't. What are you going to ask him? I'll avoid it.
No.
Okay.
Jimmy, I need a hug. I'm a little why I'm being like. I'm
coming
being,
in hot.
I'm being like somebody like if the wife doesn't give you sex for a while, you're like, ugh. I mean, not that I want sex. I don't want sex with you, Jimmy.
Hope not.
But I not at all, you know. But I do want a hug. What's up, Yair?
Hey, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. Good to see you. Now, look, right out of the bat, I know it might be loud over there. I'm pretty loud, too, though. You know, everybody's saying about this fight, oh, it's a disappointment because you know, the way it ended. But let's all, he didn't, and I like Brian, I like everybody involved, but he didn't trip and hurt his shoulder on the fucking octagon floor. You had him threatened by an arm lock. Yes, he got out of the arm lock, but he got out by yanking out. It's not like we got out, like, you know, and yes, he escaped it, but by yanking out, he fucked his shoulder up. And he did that because you had him in jeopardy with an arm lock. Am I fucking crazy, Jimmy? Jimmy, like, and I'm not shitting on Brian because I like Brian. And that fight.
No, of course.
I wanted to see, like, I don't know, but he did have him in jeopardy with that arm lock, and that's what made the shoulder come out. Am I the only guy saying this?
Yeah,
the only guy saying this? Did anybody ever bring that up to you? Like, or are they just saying, oh, too bad you didn't get the finisher?
Like, actually, people bring it up, like, in the conference press to me. Yeah, and I actually thanked the guy. I was like, hey, bro, thank you for saying it. You know, thank you for saying it because everybody was saying it's a TKO or whatever. You know, my action lead to that dislocation. That was my action. You know, I take action on the armbar, right?
Yeah.
He yanked the arm. He was trying to get out of the arm bar, yanked it, and he pulled his shoulder. You know, it was an action from me that led to that. You know, so I don't think, I don't know, like, it's never enough for people, you know, like, people is always thinking that I win by mistake or by luck, or it was some lucky elbow or this or that, you know. I don't know what else I have to do in order to gain some little respect, you know, but, you know, I think I just have to show my work and that's it, you know. But people can say whatever they want to say, the results are there. The fight was won by me, and I think at the end of the day, it's all what it matters.
And you looked good in the fight too. Do you think, because, you know, Ortega is so dangerous on the ground, do you think you surprised him a little bit on the ground, and that he was not expecting you to be as effective on the ground as you were?
No, he said in an interview, like, I don't think Jair is bad in the ground. You know, I don't think he has a bad defense. He knew, you know, I train at the gym he trains at, with the coaches he trains with. And, you know, his manager was my manager before, so they kind of know me well, you know, so they know what I'm capable of doing. I'm sure they told him, hey, you know, he's not too bad in the ground, whatever, be careful here or there. You know, but I think I surprised him a little, you know, whenever we hit the floor, for sure.
And Yair, he immediately fell back, and you didn't jump on him or hit him. Did you feel it, or did he make a noise, or what happened? Like, you immediately seemed to know he was really hurt.
He hit me a quick tap, you know, when he was like trying to pull the arm out of the situation. He kind of tapped quick, you know, he gave me a quick tap. I felt it, and then I felt like he was like trying to release the pressure. So I let him go, and I went and shake. You know, used to see if I would have to continue, but the ref stopped the fight, so I was okay. I had no need to keep on fighting no more. You know, the fight's over.
Yes, and I was also interested too. You seem to you've talked about not sparring anymore. When did you stop doing that? And was there anything that motivated you to stop doing that, or did you see that Max had stopped doing it? What kind of made you say, I'm not going to really spar much anymore?
No, I have been doing this for years, you know. This is not a last thing stuff for me. You know, I've been doing this for years. Like, I don't really spar that much, you know. Or I ask my training partner, say, you know, you want to hit me, you can hit me hard anywhere you want to hit me, but in the face, you know, like, no hard in the head. You know, we can connect a little bit or whatever, you know, but especially for this training camp, I think I only did one sparring session or not at all. You know, and he was like really just moving around, not hard, you know, at all. I was trying to take care of my body. Injuries, normally I get injured during sparring, you know, so I don't like doing sparring too much. You know, I don't think you need it. I don't think you need it too much. You know, in order for you, if you're healthy, if you're in physical shape, you're mentally prepared, everything else will be there.
It is interesting, though. It is a fine line with that, right, Yair? Because at some point in your training, developing to be the fighter you are, you kind of need to simulate the fight somewhat. And I'm with you on protecting your brain, and you know how to fight now. But to become the fighter you are, you never want to first feel a punch to the face in a real fight. You know what I mean? It's a weird, it's kind of a hard, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm with you 100%. You're obviously working for you, working for guys like Max Holloway. Like, you guys are taking this approach. But at some point, you kind of have to have that hard sparring, no? At some point?
Yeah, it's just like I'm saying, it's like moving around, like, strategy-wise, yes. tactical, technical, but not hurting each other, not trying to get your head off, you know, because that won't really help. The only thing you're going to hurt is yourself. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to hurt your opponent because no matter what, I can take a punch. You know, I already have shown that. And you know, I don't think there is a clue about that if I can take or not a punch, you know. That's not a clue about that, you know. I have shown that in the fight. But I don't like to take any more damage outside, you know, of the cage, you know. So I want to have a career, a life after my career. I want to be healthy up here. You know, I want to be healthy. I want to be as best as I can, you know, so that's what I'm just avoiding that as much as I can.
Well, you're healthy now and you got out of this fight unscathed. It's a win, right? I mean, like, so how soon do you want to get in there? Brian, people are saying run it back. He's probably going to be out a while with his shoulder. We got to move forward. What is next? What's going on? I mean, who do we want?
Yeah, I want the champ. That's 100%. I want Alexander Volkanovski. The ideal scenario would be fighting Alexander Volkanovski in Australia, you know, his hometown, his land. That'll be the perfect scenario. You know, that'll be crazy, amazing. I always wanted to go to Australia. So it would be amazing for me. It doesn't matter where it is, you know. For me, I'm glad to fight anywhere, you know, especially if he's against the champion. Now that I respect him even more after his last performance, he looked incredible. So it'll be an honor for me to fight him, you know. So hopefully he gets better. Hopefully the UFC give me the opportunity to go and fight him, and I'll be ready, you know, I'll be ready to give them war.
Yeah, I mean, you're the next logical choice. I mean, Max has fought him 3 times. Brian's fought him and lost and is hurt and just lost to you. You're obviously the next guy. I think it'd be you don't need another fight before then. I think you'd be crazy to take another fight before that if you don't have to.
I think the same, exactly the same, you know. No matter what anybody says, you know, I think exactly like that. But thank you for saying it, you know. If I say it, if I'm the first one on doing that, it will be like, whatever, this and that, or it's my turn, or I deserve it, whatever. You know, I have fight like almost everybody in the top five, you know, and I've been there for a while now. So, yeah, the next logical option is me.
I believe it's going to sell and sell hard, man, because it's such a intriguing matchup because Volkanovski, he's taken out all different types of fighters. Like, you know, but you're a unique type of fighter. And you got that X factor where it's hard to train for you, man, because you got such I feel, unique stuff in your arsenal, you know? So, I mean, I think that would be a wild fight, man. Get my money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it will be a wild fight. I think Volkanovski is real quick, explosive, he's smart, you know? He always has his strategy on point. I just think it's gonna be a little harder for him to find me, you know, especially because I have a different approach to every opponent. And he's not always the same, you know. I always bring something different in each fight. So I think I'm going to be able to adjust, as I have to adjust in order for me to win that fight, the title. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, I'm just excited about my future right now, excited about what's coming. And I'm ready. I'm ready to take the opportunities that are ahead of me.
And I thought the fight with Brian up till the point it ended was very close. Brian thought he was winning on all counts, but I didn't agree with that. I thought that your striking looked great. I thought those kicks you were throwing up the middle looked great. I thought you were very accurate. How did you feel it was going up until that point?
Yeah, I feel really good. I hear him saying the same thing. You know, he thought he was winning the fight. I think if you look into the graphics or the numbers, I think I was connecting more punches. You know, the only thing he's trying to do is like control me in the cage and try and take me down. But even there, I was connecting more punches than him. I won't say he didn't connect a couple of punches. He's strong, he's good, but I connect the most amount of punches, clear punches, hard punches, low kicks, high kicks, knees. I did the armbar attempt. Everything was there, you know. So no matter what he said or anybody says, you know, the graphics are there and the result is there as well. So
what were you doing up against the cage? It was the first time he grabbed a hold of you and you did break free. You were doing so, you were putting your heel into his calf. You were doing something that he obviously was not happy with. What were you doing? You were kicking him up against the cage. What exactly were you doing?
Yeah, I was using my heel. It's something that I always use, you know, with my training partners. I told them, like, look, like it's I like doing it a lot, you know, because it's like really annoying, you know. It's like a calf kick, but with a heel inside, in the inside part of the calf. So it really, if you do it or let somebody do it to you, it's annoying. It's painful. It's really painful. You know, it's like a shin split. It feels like a shin split, you know? And doing that for more than 20 times, I think I hit him like over 20 times with that heel. Of course, he wasn't happy with that. You know, it's painful. It's really painful. If a single low kick or a little knee into your leg, it hurts. Can you imagine a heel into your calf?
Yeah. You give one of those to Jimmy, he's tapping out. He's not beating up.
Oh, I've been kicked before. I have had fighters kick. I had John Jones kick me. I literally couldn't walk for 3 months. It was really awful. So, yeah, I hope you get the next shot. I think you deserve it. The next shot of Volkanovski, I think, is yours, and it will be fair. Because, again, you the way the fight ended is the way it ended. But, again, you won the fight. So hopefully you'll get this shot. Do you have any time frame as to when that might happen? Or you have no idea?
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in between here and there. But, you know, I'll stay ready. I'll stay healthy. I'll talk to the UFC, hear what they have to say, and just move forward. You know, I'm just ready to move forward my life and my career. I'm ready to take these big opportunities that are ahead of me, and I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm happy, and I'm motivated.
Hey, celebrate. Don't let anybody or anybody to say fucking anything. Brian took you down. He took you down into jeopardy. He thought the take. All right, I finally got him down. Fuck my arm. Let me get out of here. Hey, man, if you didn't react, he would have settled in and it might have been trouble. But you reacted. The fight ended in your favor. Congrats, bro.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the words. I'll see you guys soon.
Okay, right, we'll talk to you soon, man. Congratulations. Be good.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Look at the guns on him. Oh my God. What is that? Creatine? Chef. Look at him.
Protein. What's up, man? I'm a big fan, brother. How are you guys doing?
How are you?
Man. I like that art behind you. Is that you with a mask on being a chef?
So that's from my guys from the Special Forces. So we did a lot of training together. And every time someone leaves, they are dedicated. So you put a skull face on them, like a lot of the guys that did a lot of different missions. And that was a dedication they gave to me. Love the guys.
Do you do any jiu-jitsu? Because if you don't know a Kimura, that would be a damn shame.
So I do. So military, of course. We actually adapted Gracie's jiu-jitsu in 2003.
Yes.
Right? So that was the foundation. Yeah, exactly. Combatives, levels 1, 2, and 3. So I was one of the teachers for that.
Now, when you left the military, did you start cooking in the military or was that something you did as a kid? How did that translate to where you are now?
You know, cooking was a hobby. I'm from Mississippi. I'm from the South. So love to eat. I didn't get to eat a lot because I was from Mississippi. And I had a lot of brothers and sisters. But it was something I did with fun with my mom. So it was just like that comfort food, that soul food type of deal. And it was just a hobby of mine. And I had no idea that it will become my profession. I later on in the military, I got blown up in 9/11 in the Pentagon when he got hit in Iraq, Afghanistan, did a lot of different things. And I use a technique called cooking to cope. So I use it for therapy. So it became a therapy tool for me, along with working out and along with fighting. So all those things and nutrition, it was just, you know, everybody had their own flavor and phase. But, you know, one of the things you're going to do every day is eat. Well, you know, of course, eating is one of those things.
Now, you say I know you were in the Pentagon on 9/11 when it got hit. And did that cause depression or did you have depression before that made worse? Or like, how did that happen to you?
That caused PTSD. I wasn't depressed.
Oh, PTSD.
Big difference. You know, with anxiety, depression, I worked at a very high level. I still work at a high level. And I was young back then. I didn't know what that meant. So I was with a lot of my guys that we trained together. Like the DOD, the cops, the squats, all those guys. I lost a lot of people in that. And long story short was one day, I was also in recovery. One day they said, came to the guys and said, hey, you guys need to talk to someone. And a lot of my guys who were older were like, you know what, Chef, you need to go talk to someone. And I was like, well, my command, you know, hey, my leaders, I might want you to talk to someone. They were like, do you like your job? Roger, got it. walked away. That was back then. It was a big stigma that went along with it, with PTSD and you know, and us being who we are, the manly men, and especially if you're in a certain position and style, it was just a job. So I kind of hid behind the cooking aspect a lot, along with the working out. And then later on, when I actually went into therapy, I started doing a thing with the USO called Cooking to Cope, you know, kind of like coping triggers, coping depression, anxiety, that social distance from, you know, men and women with their spouses and their kids. And we started cooking as therapy.
Now, do you only do, I'm going right to, being a fatty, I get right to the food. Do you only do, sorry, Jimmy. I know he hits a really, he hits a really important topic, but I want to know. I want to get into all the charity stuff, but seriously, do you do any kind of like Italian food or anything? Or you just, your thing is the soul food?
Italian? Hell yeah, dude. What did you just?
I don't know. I thought you were like, oh,
I was just at an Italian restaurant the other day. I love Italian food, especially authentic. You know, a couple of my guys, matter of fact, the one who gave me this, his family's from Italy.
Yeah.
I went there with him. And I mean, here's the thing about me is people think I'm like this health nut and I died or whatever. I am not. If I have to pay. So if I'm doing it, I got to pay the piper, and I pay gladly. You know, it's just like rent every day, your car note, everything. I don't try to go by the, I still want to enjoy life, right? So it gets to that point where it becomes so uncomfortable where you just think that you have to do this, and this, and this. And the truth of the matter is that you got to do this and this and this and that, but you got to also pay that price for it. You know, that's a lot of things that people need to know to make up for it. And, you know, of course, the first thing I tell people to do, get your blood work checked, make sure there's no pre-diagnosed with, you know, DNA and blah, 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 all that good stuff. But I also tell them to live life, but be cautious. You can't eat all the fatty stuff. You can't eat all that. You got simple and complex carbohydrates. You have good fats and bad fats and all that. Just know the difference and be knowledgeable of it. But I love food.
Now, you cooked in the White House, I guess, through four administrations, Obama, Trump, Bush, and Clinton. Did different ones, do you have to learn their different tastes? I imagine Trump was the easiest because he liked fast food, so there's probably a lot more ordering out. Do you have to learn each guy and go, all right, well, this is the kind of the direction I go in with this president?
Well, everybody liked what I cooked them. They ain't got no choice.
I guess not.
No, seriously. You kind of got what these one comes with like a cheat sheet, right? So I did it for a lot of different people, and people, you learn their flavor profiles, what they like, what they don't like. And then you learn if they're going to be parts where they're givers and takers, meaning givers meaning that, you know, they want to go and kind of do protocol for all of the guests. You know, we got to go through a lot of different things, religious, cultures, just everything is scrutinized on that part of it. And then it comes down to the principle, which is, you know, FLOTUS, POTUS. And what they want to give back and what they want to do. You know, do they want to make it a big hurrah? Or do they want to just kind of keep it like a little bit, you know, nice and petite? A lot of times it was like with the Obamas, for instance, they had the garden. So everything had to come from the garden. That was one of the rules for it. You could do a million things with vegetables. You know what I mean? And then, like you said, with Trump wasn't as, you know, he had a different mindset. They had a different role. So his things were kind of, I use the word dumbed down a little bit.
So when you're in the White House, how long are you working there until you meet a president for the first time? And how long are you working there before you're used to seeing the president walk through the kitchen? Like, how long does that take to adjust to? Are you just, oh, it's the president of the United States in the kitchen?
I'm going to be very honest with you. When I first went there, I was young, and the way I got in, I had an opportunity. I went inside. I didn't look left or right. I didn't, I had a job to do, because in the back of my mind, the way I grew up in Mississippi was somebody wanted me to fail. So I didn't have time to, I've never been a fanboy. You know what I mean? So even when the president came, I paid him no attention. Even when she came, I paid him no attention. Same way I am today. I just know I have a job to do. So with my mindset, I was already used to it, even though I had never seen anyone whatsoever. You know, it was just work is first. And then everything else is afterwards.
Yeah, I guess. And also being in the military, I guess that teaches you a certain mindset and discipline when you're around dignitaries or important or whatever the person is. It just teaches you a certain way of conducting yourself, I guess.
Yes and no. It also depends on the individual. We get some fan people I have to slap back in place and say, you know, hey, we're working. Stop it, you know?
Now, your book, by the way, it's called Call Me Chef, Damn It. It's a veteran's journey from the rural South to the White House. And I wish I would have had a copy of this first, because you're such an interesting guy. And the way you talk about your own, just battling depression and these things that you don't hear a lot of. Do you find that it's hard, like, to stop yourself when you're spiraling? Like, I would go through spirals where there's almost a chemical being dumped from your brain that you can physically feel in your upper chest. And it's very hard to stop it when it starts.
No, you know what? You said that perfectly. I love the way you put that. And it's hard because you look at guys like us, and we do have that stigma, you know, like a fighter, like Matt, like you, you know, laughing comedians and you know, me working and doing what I am and 24-inch biceps and doing all the push-ups. But you don't think what's going on internally. I said, never judge a book by its cover. You know, you don't know what's going on with a person. And it was hard because I was in inpatient for 4 months, and I was another inpatient for almost 6 months, and I was an outpatient for a year. Nobody would never think that. And I just fought the whole time. And their remedy for me, I'm not going to lie to you, was medication. I was sedated like the whole time. I was a big guy. I wasn't aggressive, but I was very direct and transparent. And when you're that, people look at you differently. You can't speak your voice without them thinking something otherwise. You know, one person can say the same thing they said, but they'll think of it as being calm. I said, they'll think of me being aggressive just because of our look and our demeanor. So I was given a lot of different things. And I'm serious. It was terrible for me. And one day I quit cold turkey with everything I was doing. And I was going on my therapy sessions, which I still do. And one day, nothing was working. I was fighting. I was fighting everything I was doing. And then I found out that my therapy for me was, instead of trying not to accept it, was to accept it. So like when I meditate in the morning, I think about everything negative. Here's the deal, because negativity is going to be around you. You can't be around positive people all the time. They're going to run over you. They're going to get your finger. And I had to embrace that. And so I fed off of that. And then what I also fed off of was people, right? So if I met, you know how they say one bad apple spawns a whole bunch. I can have 100 bad apples, and that one person would save me, because they showed me who they were. And they reminded me of who I am and why I'm here and what I'm doing. So I kind of use people as my therapy. And of course, kids and, you know, other different causes about that. But I feed off of people are my coping tubes.
When people are depressed, sometimes it's a chemical imbalance. Like sometimes training, the natural endorphins that come with training, yes, for me at least, could help with anxiety, depression, and all those things. But other times it's a little deeper where they have a chemical imbalance. How do you know? How do you know what you're dealing with that?
You know what? You know, it is. And I have to go back to that and piggyback off of you on that part. It is a chemical. People don't understand that part of it. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. It's hard because I can explain it because I get that a lot. I mean, I cry. I mean, I cry sometimes for no reason. I go into this thing and just want to sit in the corner, and I embrace it. And I tell people, maybe that's what you do, because some people like to fight it. You know, some people got to fight it, and they let it overwhelm them, you know, instead of accepting that part of it. And then going to the same people who are like-minded or people with true hearts, and, you know, not like the, I use the word where people just have to go through the cabin and say, oh, you're okay. How you doing? It'll get better. That's BS. And you know it is, right? Especially if you got family members or friends or people that really do care about you. But if you do have something like that, you do need to go. You do need to get checked, because if it's a chemical imbalance, sometimes you may need something to boost it up. And sometimes medication is necessary. Sometimes you have to take that part where it's like, okay, I got it. You know, like I was just overworked and I had hiccups for the last 6 weeks, right? And I'm like, I'll get over it. And at the point I was on a plane coming back from Mississippi, I just received the key to the city, and I'm on a plane throwing up, right? I couldn't tape down anything, even water. I'm like, oh my God, what is going on? I go to the doctor. They know me, and I'm like, it's your work. It's work. You're working yourself so much. Your body is like, hey, slow down for a second. You're taking on so much energy and so many different things that you got to stop. But that's the part what you just said, Matt, is where it's that chemical imbalance where you're trying to fight it. And I had they gave me a shot, IV, took me a couple of pills, and the hiccup stopped. And I was like, damn it, you know, okay, it's a reminder that we are not Superman, you know. Right. Superman.
And it's frustrating too when you're talking to someone. When you said you're in recovery, do you mean from being from depression or from drugs and alcohol? Do you mean like sober recovery?
Recovery from which part?
I thought you said you were in recovery before. Maybe I'm incorrect. Maybe
I was inpatient. So I was inpatient.
Oh, okay.
I was inpatient. So inpatient, I was in there for PTSD, anxiety, okay, depression. I had some drinking use, but I took medication for that also. It was a pill where if you take it and you drink.
Antabuse? Antabuse, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, terrible, terrible.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, yeah. No, I was asking because it's hard when you're talking to people who are like depressed or they're struggling and you know the right things to say to them, but they're not ready to hear it. It's very hard to do, you know, people who are family or friends who are just like, no, but you don't. And it's like, you can't penetrate it if there's no desire by them to be penetrated.
But you know what's funny about that is it can be like a relationship. You can be with your spouse or your loved one, your girlfriend, boyfriend, and you'll try to talk civilized to them and they won't hear anything. And then a complete stranger will come over and say the exact same thing you say. Yeah. Oh, I got it. I got it. Like, what the hell? I just told you that. It's just the way that people think. It's the way they communicate. And sometimes it takes an outside. You'll be surprised. When I said I take on a lot of energy, is like I answer all of my messages, all my DMs, all of my things, because I have to vet people. I get people with suicide ideation, depression, sexual abuse. I mean, just people who just feel out of it. And I give my time. I do. I give that 5 minutes. If it takes 5 minutes to save someone's life, I'll do that. That's not a problem. I'll do that easily, you know, even if it's taken away from me, you know, because sometimes that one person's life that you saved, which is always equal, can save a million more along with me.
Now, Chef, are you a married guy?
No, I'm just here.
You're just here. Now, listen, this is the thing. It's with dating. I couldn't make somebody a fucking grilled cheese sandwich. You, my friend, when you ever trying to date, do you ever say, hey, listen, let me make a nice meal for you? I mean, that's got to be
they love it.
You know, is it politically correct to say panty dropper?
Oh, I was going to say, but I can't say that.
You can. By the way, give me a new co-host next time on Unfiltered. I'm only fucking that. But listen, no, but seriously. Now, Jimmy, you ever try to?
It's a fair question. Women like it when you cook. Anyone likes it when you cook. No matter who you're dating, they liking someone who can cook anybody for them.
But did you ever date for a date? Did you ever cook for a date or no?
I have. I've done that a couple times in the past. You know, now I just gotta flex a little bit, and then the cooking is just like that added on. And you know, especially if you're a man that treats a woman right, you know, as you have that dying trait on there where it's like, I'm very particular and all that. I'm respectful. I'm from the South. You know, I talk, I open doors. I do all those things you're supposed to do. And cooking is just my hobby. I mean, I love cooking. So I'm also a pastry chef, my master ice carver. I do a lot of different things in that part of it. And you're right about that. You do get treated like, oh my God, you can cook. You can do this. I'm marrying you. I want you. Here's my baby.
Yes.
So wait, you're an ice carver. I did read that. So that, like, do you make those beautiful ice sculptures?
I do.
Oh, those are awesome.
Yeah. I have one show coming. I'm not supposed to say this, but it's coming out in a couple months. It'll be on Disney where you're going to see that. And then I actually started filming another show. I'm with Gordon Ramsay, so I can't say anything about that, but that happens next month also.
Are you an artist? Sorry to interrupt you. Are you an artist, like a sculptor at all, to do something like that?
I am. I'm actually a sugar puller. I paint like this. I also do chocolate sculptures. I do tallow, I do wood. I love things that just, like, I'm all over the place. I just all over it. You know how they say a master, I master everything. I just want to know how to do it.
Jimmy.
That's why, it's not surprising. That's where the depression comes. The creative people, there's always a little bit of crazy that comes with the ability to be creative. It's hand in hand.
Yeah, like they say, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's very positive. You got such a positive energy about you. It's very, you know, I like it. I like it a lot.
I appreciate that. I mean, it's a lot. Same with you guys, you know?
And you do. Now, I don't like push-ups. Now, I know how many you do. My first thought was, I wonder if it was an OCD thing. But then I heard one of the reasons that you do 2,222. There was a representation in the 222, correct?
It is. So 22 basically commit suicide a day. And I use that as my foundation for being in the military with the 22 vets, but I also cat out with the spouses and then the kids. And then I tell people, and it went from that because I had a million people doing push-ups, and we did almost 600 some million push-ups. You know, and I said to him, it's not, mental health is an epidemic, right? You know, even with suicide is between ages 11 and 20, 29 is a number two, right? On the charts in the US all throughout is number 10, right? And you think about that, put that in perspective. This is mental health. This is mental wellness, right? That you're thinking about. And I tell people it's not my cause, it's what your cause is. Push whatever you want to push for. Yeah. And, you know, I get pushback, like push-ups doesn't, you know, stop suicide. And I'm like, does pouring some water on somebody's head stop ALS? Does walking for cancer stops cancer? Is the right. Santa Claus is this, right? Do you want to take that from your kids? I mean, guys, be quiet and just support. If you can't do it and you won't want to do it, move over. Let everybody else do it. Don't rain on everybody's plate. I get this from military, non-military, or however it's going to be, but I'm going to still keep doing what I do. And the thing about me is I'm also an endurance trainer. So it doesn't just happen overnight. I started this a long time ago. I'm old school. This is not, everybody else is catching up now. You know what I'm talking about, Matt, right?
Yes. I love push-ups.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is old school right here, you know? And people don't get that. They're so used to saying you can't because they can't, or they haven't even tried, you know? But that was one way with me being a strategic on that part and doing it with my platform. Is if I did 22 push-ups a day, it wouldn't get any attention. I mean, I got 24-inch biceps or 25, whatever they are. They'd be like, man, you can do more push-ups than that. And that's what I did. And I wanted you to not ask, wow, it's a lot of push-ups. I wanted you to say, why 2,222? What's significant right. about that number? And everybody says that.
That makes perfect sense, yeah.
You do those push-ups. When do you do those push-ups? You do how many
do you do? In the morning. So I get up at 3 in the morning, I meditate, and then I push.
How long does it take you? Like I do a good set of 10. I'm good for 10 and then I need to break. What are your sets like?
Yeah, I do. It takes me about an hour and a half or a little bit more if I'm lazy. Right. So I do 125 that equals to 1776, which is also significant. Everything I do is for a reason.
Wow.
So wait, you break it up in how many? You break it up?
125.
One sets of 125.
But this is what I do. Tell me if you like this, because to stay in shape. And listen, I don't got biceps like yours. I have no bicep there. I tore that. I have that. But this is what I do, Chef. I do like an hour of jiu-jitsu. And then after that, just so I don't like lose my shape, I do 20 push-ups. I turn over. I do 20 crunches. 15, 15, 10, 10, 5, 5. Then I go back up. 5, 5, 10, 10. So it equals back up to 20. And it equals 100 push-ups. So that's not like, but I feel good. I feel at the end, I'm like, ah. So I mean, I know it's not 100 in a row, but when I do that, or I do 20, my buddy does 20, with his fist underneath me, so I go all the way down. Then I do 15, he does 15. Back and forth, 5, back to 20. It's nowhere near yours, but I still feel, I feel good.
And you know what I love what you just said about that is because you said, I still feel the best I feel, right? Yeah. So when I'm an endurance trainer, when I work out, I destroy my body. I tell people, don't try to keep up with me. So when I say my training makes my push-ups look like child's play.
Yeah.
I work out. If I do, I was with Mark Bell doing a thing and we did dumbbell presses and push-ups. I did 50 at 225. 25 reps at 225 and then 50 push-ups, 225, 50 push-ups. I did that like 15 times, right? And it was like, they stopped and they couldn't go on, but I wanted to let them see this is endurance training. It's just for muscle memory, longevity. This is for lifespan, right? When you're younger, you deserve it. But when you get older in the age like you are and we are, everybody is, you know, it's like, okay, they don't look that way. They make excuses like, well, I used to do this, I used to do that, and so forth. It's not a used to, it's still doing.
Yes. You, what is your sleep like? Because I'm a shit sleeper. So I'm always like, my endurance is so bad, and I have apnea. Like, how do you sleep?
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't sleep a lot, right? I live here, and I live in D.C., and I also travel a lot. Literally, I get back on a plane tomorrow. I just got back here 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And I travel constantly and I'm on a lot of different, like, I'm actually getting ready to go to Brazil in 2 weeks, right? The president, Bolsonaro, he's asked me a few times to come there. But the thing about it is that I've worked like this my whole entire life. So people had little memes and things. When I said, I did a thing with men's health where I said, sometimes I get to sleep 2 hours a night. And sometimes I sleep, you know, 4 hours a night. Normally I don't get over 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night. And they say, how do you do that? Right. And it's hard because, you know, it's kind of, I have to break it down and dumb it down. The people say, have you ever seen a functional drunk? Right. A functional drunk where they can drink. My brother was a functional drunk. Right. He could drink a whole fifth and you would not even know that it even existed. But what happens with my body is it's programmed that way, just like my push-ups, right? And then once after, let's say a few months, I crash and then I do a reset and then it starts back. Now I'm to the point to where I'm like, I need my rest where I have to force myself to start taking some type of medication where I can get more sleep, you know, naturally.
Can you fall? Like, I'm so bad at falling asleep and staying asleep. Dr. J said that one of the best attributes he had as an athlete was that he said he could sleep on the bus or he could sleep like on the way to the arena. Like he said, he could sleep anywhere. And that gave him such an advantage over everybody else. Can you fall asleep while you're traveling?
I can't do it on a plane. I can do it if I'm with friends traveling because I trust my mind. Right. Yeah. And I also go into REM when I'm sleeping short periods. My body's adapted where right away, because it knows I get that sleep, I go to REM right away compared to somebody that can sleep 12 hours and they may get 3 hours of sleep.
Right. And when you were in the Pentagon, when it got hit, were you upstairs? I don't know I've been to the Pentagon once for Wounded Warriors, but I don't know how it's structured. Were you downstairs or were you upstairs?
I was up. So, you know, it was funny because right after that happened, the next day, I don't know if you remember, the paper came out and they showed a diagram of the Pentagon. And they showed where, at the time, my boss and all the Secretary of Army, Secretary of Defense, they were stacked right on top of each other, right? But nobody thought that a plane could come and if they hit in the right direction, you know, that it would take out every national security agency, you know, entity in the Pentagon at once. And so when it hit on us, north side, south side, whatever it was, right? I was over there doing work and they had the gym, which is called the POAC. And right after that, whoever the Brink Jeans was on the media did that. And they actually had to move all of them throughout the whole entire Pentagon.
So people would know that.
So people would, yeah, or if something like that happened again, it wouldn't take out the whole entity. If that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, split them up around the building.
Yeah. And then maybe the more important question, when you went to that doctor for the hiccups, did he try to scare you? Did he say, well, chef, let's just see what let's say, boom! And you were like, oh, man, I'm only fucking it up.
He would have
had
a broken nose.
The guy tried to scare him to get rid of the hiccups.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an old.
Yeah. How do you scare a guy like Andre? I guess you show him a picture of me and say you could look like this. I guess that would be terrifying. And the book is called Call Me Chef, Damn It. It's a veteran's journey from the rural South to the White House. Well, you're a really interesting guy. You have such a full life that you lead. And isn't it crazy that as much as you know that and can write that down on paper, in those moments where things are dark and depressing, like none of those facts mean anything in those moments. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you ever step back and come out of a depression and go, what the fuck? Like, I think I have everything that I would have thought that I wanted. And that's not what it takes to make you feel good.
You know, and I realize that a lot more so now, you know, I mean, I had a friend of mine who just passed like 2 weeks ago, business partner's friend, billionaire and great, full of energy. You know, did everything, lived life to the fullest. And then he was gone, you know, right the next day after I talked to him. And it was like, wow, this guy, you know, you feel a certain way. And then, you know, you see me in sweats. And I also do a lot of things where I want to see what people think about me, really. You know, when I go travel all the time, I wear my sweats and I'll be in first class. And I want you to judge me because you are going to judge me. It's just human nature. You're going to look at me. You're going to think, this person, that person, and I want to know who you really are. And I want to see who you really are. But I get a lot of that, but that's like my social experiment for myself. You know, I want to see if people still good or if they're this person or that person. But at the same time is that I realize that I don't have to have a three-piece suit on. And I mean, I like my nicer things in life, but I don't have to show it and push it in front of your face to make me feel good about myself because I'm going to feel good about myself regardless.
I love sitting in the front of the plane wearing sweatpants. Exactly. I love it. Exactly. Some guy has to wear a suit. It's like, dummy, you have to wear a belt.
It's the best thing in the world. It's right there.
Oh, I look like a pile of shit when I get on a plane. I love it. And when I get off.
I want to sit by you. That's who I want to sit by.
You want to be comfortable.
Yes. Well, Andre, look, good luck with the book. It's really, again, there's so much in here. I could talk to you for 2 hours. And good luck with it. And I hope we have you on again. What you're doing is a great thing. Is there any foundation you want to plug or how people can be helpful?
Just be helpful. I have my own nonprofit, 222 Inc., which is about 2222 Inc., which is a 501c3, which is about nonprofits, about helping deprived kids and people that are a little bit more difficult, because that's what I'm all about. I grew up in a project, so I try to give back. But I'll be honest with you, I support all nonprofits that are worth it out of debt and do things like that. Just be good to people, be good to yourself. You are your greatest worth, and smile once in a while.
Yep, and everybody go out and get this book. That's a great book.
What's his Instagram? What is your Instagram?
My Instagram is Real Chef Rush, one word, Real Chef Rush.
Oh, you got a new follower in me, buddy.
Following you, brother.
Nice right. Talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. You're really a fascinating guy.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Nice to meet you.
Okay, be well.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I went to my 30-year reunion.
You did. You said fuck it, right?
Yeah, fuck it. You know what's fucked up, though, dude? Like, listen.
Are you talking low? I can't hear you.
I am.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe like my connection was all messed up.
You know why? I'm home. But you know what's fucking funny is, dude, nobody brought their spouse. Why am I talking? I'm not talking too long, am I?
Nobody did what?
Nobody brought their wife, you know, or husband. And, or very few. But I did. Because yeah. I'm that guy, you know. So, Jimmy, people get excited to see me. I haven't seen them in a while. Long story short, and not a major fight or nothing, but my wife afterwards is like, you know, hey, you're a bit of a flirt. And I go, I'm not. I'm not a flirt, Jimmy. I haven't seen these people since elementary. And guess what, Jimmy? Not to be that guy, but I kind of did some things. Yeah. I kind of did some things. So when I go to the 30-year reunion, even the guys get sometimes a little, oh, shit, man, I haven't seen you since, you know, you shocked the whole world type of thing. So listen.
Yeah.
People get happy to see your friend. You see the exact, it's the exact opposite. See, when I see you twice a week, it's the exact opposite look that they give. No, I'm only kidding. You love me.
I love you. I'm very happy to see you.
Jimmy, so you know, I think there might have been some selfies and stuff. So my wife's like, hey, you know. So then I'm like, come on, you're being ridiculous. So then also she shows me a picture on Facebook. She goes, look at this. She goes, look at this bitch. She cropped, and then she cropped my wife out of the picture. Okay, so the picture of me, the girl, like you see like a quarter of my wife's face, like, all right, you might have a point with that chick. I don't even fucking know that girl. But the point is, anyway, listen, the point is, Jimmy, it was a fun time. I was happy to see everybody, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and you had fun. Everybody was happy to see you, right?
Oh, yeah, Jimmy. Jimmy, you're not going to get happy to see me at a party.
I mean, I can't imagine how they wouldn't be.
Even though I went to one of your parties once. It was so lovely and so good. But I got a little high with, what's that tall, who's the tall comic? I don't know. Stoner. What the fuck's his name?
I don't know.
What's his name? The tall Stoner.
Andrew Schultz?
No, he was at your party. I know him. I fucking It's bothering the. He's got a voice, a little weird, tall guy. Dan Schroeder. Dan.
Oh, Dan. Oh, Dan Soder.
Dan Soda.
There you go.
I was with him on your balcony. So then, and he's such a cool dude. I like him.
Oh, okay.
So when I went back inside, I remember like he was like, you know, you had your friends there. And I felt like I was getting a little too talky. I go, I'm going to embarrass Jimmy. That's what I said to myself when I went inside.
No.
I got to leave. I got to leave because I'm going to embarrass my friend Jimmy.
You're not going to embarrass me.
I did.
A little bit, but not very.
I made an excuse. I go, Jimmy, I love you, man. I had a slice of pizza or two. And I go, let me get out of here before people are like,
it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. Do you remember the party? Yes, you do.
I do. Yeah. I had a great time. I want to do it again. I'm getting my apartment's got to be fixed, unfortunately.
Well, Jimmy, I had a ball.
So yeah, Matt, let's talk about the fights. We already talked to Yair. And again, Matt Schnell, Simadarji, and him had a tremendous fight. It's one of the best rounds of MMA, the most exciting rounds. Simadarji was dropping these horrible fucking elbows on him. He trialed him and put him out. I mean, I couldn't believe he went out like that. Great fight. I mean,
you know, I loved his timing for his takedown. I loved his jujitsu. I loved him getting to mount. I loved him beating him up for mount. Once he lost mount, he did certain things where, which fight am I thinking of? I'm thinking of Gilbert Burns' brother, Herbert Burns.
Yes.
Now, that fight, he had, now look, Snell has very dangerous jujitsu. Right. Now there's two different fighters here. There's one thing I seen a difference in those in their use of jiu-jitsu. Both very different, very dangerous with the submissions, but Snell had better distance management, managing your distance in a fight. Mm-hmm. When you're on bottom, he would offset the balance. And if that didn't lead to him getting out or getting a submission, it would lead to setting up a submission or him getting out. And for instance, he's on bottom. What does he do? When Simadarji was on top of Schnell, he offset his balance with a basic scissor sweep. He didn't sweep him over. But when he went to keep his balance, all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's in a triangle omoplata. And that led to Schnell having to defend the omoplata. And he tried to slam him out. And then Simadarji tried to get.
Is that when Simadarji got on top of him?
He tried to slam him and then when he did slam him, he used that omoplata to reverse him to get on top. So he uses jiu-jitsu, especially on bottom. If you're not creating distance, you're offsetting the balance. So that's picture somebody trying to knock you out. Picture you trying to knock somebody out with me grabbing your shoulders, rocking you back and forth. So it's like by offsetting the balance, they can't set you up to hurt you. When Herbert Burns lost his submission, he had his pelvis, his body was more almost like in a fetal position. His hips were low. So there's no creating any kind of distance. So now you're not tying him up. You're not creating distance. You're in distance to get hit. And you're not offsetting his balance. So fuck, it's nothing but downhill. And that's what happened to Herbert.
Yeah.
You know? And God, man, did he hit the fucking, he hit the wall hard. You know?
Yeah, he didn't get up for a while after that, too.
Oh, no.
He was grabbing his leg, so.
I mean, he didn't want to go in that second round. His brother basically was like, look, you're going in.
Yeah.
Gilbert's like, look, man, you're getting out there. You had good positions. But it's got to be very – I know we switched. We'll get back to the Schnell fight in a second.
That's fine.
But with Herbert, he had his jiu-jitsu. He's very – obviously very gifted in jiu-jitsu. But trying to get somebody out with a submission and putting everything into it is the equivalent of trying to knock somebody out, putting everything into it. It's great if it works.
If it doesn't,
if it doesn't work, guess what? You're exhausted. Not only are you exhausted, that happens on the feet, you can get countered, but now you're exhausted with somebody on top of you. Not just somebody, with somebody who knows who's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. So now we're in trouble, and that's what happened.
What fight recently, Matt? I don't know if you remember, there was somebody going for a submission and he realized he didn't have it and he stopped pursuing it. And they were saying how smart that was because of you're not going to blow your arms. Like he knew he didn't have it, so he didn't waste the energy. And I don't know if it was this week or last Saturday. I'm kind of annoyed that I can't remember that. You don't know what I'm talking about?
No, I do not.
Let me see if I can't remember what fight it was. I just remember hearing that.
Bill Algeo.
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good jiu-jitsu. And he felt comfortable. That's not the first time he was in a triangle. You know what I'm saying? So when he got out of that, and sometimes he'd look away and come down with a strike, not only is Herbert exhausted? But now he's now this guy's fucking with him. Now he's like, oh shit. Now he's like, this guy not only survived, he's got some juice. And then Herbert, not only did he, his body physically give out, mentally he was fucking done. So that's something to work on. Hey, what about Ricky Simone, man?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah,
that was great fucking fight. Awesome, dude. And Jack Shore, you know, I know you said he was very sure of himself.
No. I said I don't know jack shit. He dropped, well, Simone about, dropped him.
How about Booth or both of them?
We both stink. Simone dropped him and then jumped on him, but he staggered him and dropped him. So, yeah, that was a beautiful finish.
There was so many exciting fucking fights. I'm going all over the place, though, but there's a fight that really sticks out with me, how great this person fought.
I'm going to guess.
You're not going to guess it.
Amanda Lamas over Michelle Waterson.
Well, I love that, but that's not what I was. I don't want to. Now you're making me take away from Amanda because now I'm not. That wasn't the fight I'm talking about. But I will talk about it. I love that guillotine. I love that fucking guillotine. Shit, that's a money guillotine. Now that guillotine was you're tapping or you're sleeping because Michelle was looking great. She had a pretty good game plan, you know. But
yeah,
Amanda Lemos guillotine from hell, you know.
And the ref didn't see her tap. But, you know, she did tap and she acknowledged she tapped. The ref didn't see it.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, she was honest about it.
She didn't see it. She was honest. She did the right thing. And
that's right.
And of course, Michelle is very respectful. Michelle Waterson. And she did the right thing also and said, all right, you know, I did. I said, uncle.
Misha Tate was, by the way, and Misha has 1-2 since coming back. And I don't know if that weight cut is going to, you know, if she's going to want to stay at 125 or if she's going to jump back up, but she's in every fight. But that was definitely a clear win for Lauren Murphy.
No, that's the person I was talking about.
Oh, Lauren Murphy. Okay. Yeah.
Lauren Murphy looked fantastic, Jimmy.
Yeah,
and you got to look who she fought. Misha Tate did not look bad. She did not look bad, but anytime she stepped forward, she'd get met with a jab in her face. It was fucking awesome. It was like Lauren Murphy was so on point that it was like, if I didn't see her just fight Valentina, I want to see that after that. You know, I know she fought her and she didn't do well. She didn't do that great. And
no one does against Valentina.
But versus Valentina.
But no one looks good against her.
But Jimmy, she looked so on point. She did everything right. From her takedown defense to Misha, to her accurate striking, to meeting her with the jab anytime she stepped forward. I mean, she wasn't overshooting her I got to clean up my language.
Go ahead, it's okay.
No, because I was going to say something awful. But she wasn't wasting energy, just throwing just nonchalantly. She was very so strategic. And I'll tell you, it was like a good day of sparring. When she wanted a takedown, she got it. She followed through with it. If she felt like she wasn't going to keep her down, she got up. She was striking. She did. I was so impressed with Lauren Murphy. I was watching it be like, man, she's just underhooking, pummeling, not being bullied. It was fun. It was something. It was awesome, Jimmy. Jimmy. Right.
Yeah.
Jimmy. Is it true?
Misha's very tough, though. I love Misha, and I love that she didn't. She did not quit, but yeah, she was in trouble.
Listen, it almost brings me back to our new friend Chef Andre with the hiccups. Is it true that after John Jones, you didn't really blink before John Jones gave you that kick?
No. I used to get the guys to show me moves or whatever, just to feel that he put his. Started
the blinking.
Oh no! I started blinking in childhood, probably from other things.
I thought
going into other places.
I thought he kicked you so hard that all of a sudden you started developing that habit of
blinking. No, I actually think he kicked me so hard I stopped for a while. He kicked the blink out. He put his fucking shin, dude. He put his shin in my upper thigh, and I had to go to the bathroom. I almost threw up. Like it was so. I'm not used to being hit there. Oof. Those leg kicks, man. I think that's another reason I love the leg kick so much. It's just such a devastating weapon when it's done right. Hey, look, thank you to Chef Andre and of course the great Yair Rodriguez who was able to jump on with us beforehand. And we'll be back on Wednesday.
Jimmy, we gotta say though,
I'm not helping you.
Shane Burgos
Yep.
I don't think we mentioned that Shane Burgos.
Yeah, he looked great.
Defeated Charles Jourdain. Yeah. And I'll tell you.
Very close.
A lot of the guys that were the underdogs came through.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that Jourdain might have snuck that out, but I was happy to see Shane get it because I like Shane so much. And by the way, the TK over Muslim Salikov was really impressive. And we both picked against Jing Leon, which was I wish we hadn't. We had a rough go. And we both picked Mudarji. We both had Sue. We both had Burgos, which turned out to be correct. We both had Misha. We both had Brian. One of us had Amanda, and you took Michelle Waters.
Li Zhiyang. Pronounce that right?
Ling Zhiyang.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
He looked fucking awesome.
Yeah, he did.
He took out Muslim Sagal.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm working on
the way I pronounce things.
And Muslim is 18-3 too. He's, you know, he's not an easy win. And again, after Lee's what was Lee's last fight? I picked against him, which I kind of wish I hadn't. Oh, let me look him up. What was that last fight? Yeah, he dropped. Oh, that's right. It was Shumayev. Okay. Yeah. Hamzat. Yep. All right.
Well, listen. He showed that not only did he come back, he came back with a guy that wanted to grapple him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, Jimmy. I'm so happy. Good night of fights, Jimmy.
Yep.
You know?
And don't forget to buy – oh, sorry, but I was saying, don't forget to buy Andre's book, Chef Andre. Really, really a great guy and a very interesting guy to talk to. And we'll talk on Wednesday.
Plug, what do you want to plug?
I'm going to be in Denver this weekend.
Ooh.
Friday, Saturday at the Great Comedy Works. I also have Rhode Island. I have August. I have Rochester, and I also have Minneapolis coming up. So come see me if you want. If not, I don't blame you.
Hey, man, if you're anywhere near Huntington, New York, Long Island, that's where I am. Long Island, New York, I should say. You know, sarahbjj.com. Hey, Jimmy, I like to have a good time. I will see you in a couple of days, and I can't wait.
All right, buddy. See you soon.
Goodbye, Jimmy. Goodbye, everyone.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.